Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Oh, here we are, a place I didn't think any of us really thought we would be right before the supposed start of the Koberger trial, which we thought may get pushed back further, but surprise, it all ended much sooner than we all expected. Joining me to discuss where we're at, where it's going, Bob Mata, defense attorney extraordinaire.
Thanks, I've added
extraordinaire to it this week.
I appreciate that, my brother.
So where were you when when you got the news that, oh, my God, he's giving a plea? I was in my kitchen cooking. Robin Drake, one of our contributors, texted me going, did you see? And I was like, holy, yeah. How about you?
Okay. I love this question. And ironically, when we found out, because it was Friday, right?
Yeah, I think
that he was pleading. My father had just had a stroke.
Yeah.
So I was in the hospital with my dad, because I had just gotten done with some softball with my daughter when the news kind of broke. And then I'm like, and it was kind of like one of those things, and you and I both is kind of, you know, reporters, and we like to get things out as soon as possible. I'm like, man, it's like this every time for me, where I've got some kind of real life family shit going on when something huge breaks. Like I think I was stuck at like Crime Con when they dismissed like Alec Baldwin's charges.
Yeah.
And like when that whole thing went on, I'm like, oh, cause that, like, for me, that was like a huge story, because you've got a prosecutor getting flame thrown. You got her taking the stand. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was like, when that news broke, I saw it on Twitter, and I told Allie, I'm like, holy shit, Koberger's taking a plea. Yeah. And yeah, so that was it. And then I was shocked and not shocked, both. You know what I mean? It's like I was shocked because of the timing, in that the judge, Hippler, had just ruled on their motion to continue. So, you know, you have and Taylor just, you know, a few weeks earlier preparing a very lengthy motion to continue motion, which he denied. And then, which kind of shows you where her mindset was. She's asking for more time for multiple reasons. One of those being the Dateline episode. Others, you know, I just haven't had time to get through the thousands of files, the 16 terabytes or 30 terabytes, whatever the fuck it is. And then, you know, the other part of it, like the background stuff. So I'm thinking, all right, well, like when I see that as an attorney, I'm like, okay, she's going to trial on this. Because the fact of the matter is, Tony, many, many cases end up settling or, you know, pleading out on the doorstep 11th hour. Yeah. That's not unusual, you know, but in a death penalty case like this, you know, it was a little surprising, and you could tell from the fact that she had filed that there had been no substantive discussions about a plea. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because like typically in those types of cases, like when we handled Garcia, which was a death penalty case, they made that offer very early so that they didn't have to do all the work preparing for trial, because you can never assume as attorneys, no matter if you're on the defense side or the prosecution side, that either the defendant's going to take a plea or that the state's going to offer it. Mm-hmm. So you have to just do the work as if you're going to trial. So when they made that offer early in Garcia and we went to our client, he's like, absolutely not. You know, I didn't do this. We knew that we were, you know, we had to prepare for the fight. Now, that doesn't mean that down the road he's not going to change his mind. His evidence continues to come in and discovery, you know, continues to come in as they build the case, which, you know, in these types of cases, you get two years post arrest. They are continuing to investigate. It's like this concept that I think some people think that once the arrest is made, they're done investigating. Nothing could be further from the truth. Mm-hmm. That's when they have more access to the defendant than ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they're trying to get more evidence. They always want to have as much evidence at their disposal as possible to get a conviction. So they're going to keep, you know, digging and digging and digging up until trial. So you see it in every case. So yeah, I was surprised and not surprised, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more when we start talking about some of the reactions from some of the families in terms of how they were treated by the prosecution in terms of that decision that was made by the prosecution. But it was kind of a crazy day.
Why 2.5 years in, I guess, is the big question. Why was there not an offer made early on? Why last minute? That's my question. Why?
I think, like, if I had to guess, man, you know, like initially, because like if we recollect back when Ann Taylor was appointed to the case, right? I remember her coming out and making a statement to the effect that he was factually innocent. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which means that my guy did not do this. You have the wrong guy, which technically is unethical. Like we as defense attorneys are not supposed to go out and say that. Mm-hmm. Like we can go out and say, you know, my client is presumed innocent.
Yeah.
And you know, the state has to prove their case and that kind of thing. To go out on a limb as a defense attorney and like, kind of break the rules and say, you know, my client is factually innocent. He didn't do this is a different thing than saying he's presumed innocent. Right.
Yeah.
So when she did that, I think the state was of the mindset that, all right, well, and I think that if we were to look back, she probably said that prior to, you know, cause when you are a defense attorney and you're having those initial conversations with your client pre-trial, you don't have the discovery yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I talk about it on my podcast all the time. You know, it's like, I don't have, like, it's not the real world where you have clients that come in and, you know, they confess to you. Mm-hmm. Like that's the movies and TV. That's not real life.
Yeah.
A vast majority of the time they're going to come in and they're going to say, and I asked the question very carefully. I'm saying, don't tell me what you did. Tell me what they're saying that you did, they being the government.
Yeah.
Right. Cause that's a different question as well. And, you know, at that point, if they're denying it, when I start getting discovery and I start seeing the evidence, that's when I have another conversation with my client wherein I'm saying, all right, you need to come into the office. I just got a big discovery dump. I've gone through it. I've got some problems. I've got some questions I need to ask you. And that's where I'm saying, you know, at this point, you lying to me is pointless. Mm-hmm. You know, for me to be able to help you, you have to be truthful with me because, you know, if things are rebuttable, don't have me spinning my wheels on things that I'm not going to be able to disprove, you know, in terms of evidence.
Then what do they, let me ask you right there in that moment of that question, because I don't want to lose it. What if they say I did it at that moment in time? Like, yeah, I did do it.
If they said that they did it, typically I'm saying, all right, well, then, and it depends on what type of case we're talking about. If we're talking about a murder, you know, that's one thing. If we're talking about, because I mean, in what I'm talking about in terms of that is sentencing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a first or second degree murder, the sentence range is heavy either way. You know, so in terms of what I'm going to be able to accomplish in terms of a plea agreement is very limited.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're talking about your more run of the mill, not super high felonies, but low felony cases, which would a bulk of criminal defense attorneys' practices are, you know, you're not getting murder case after murder case running in because most of those people can't afford private counsel anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're far and few between. So usually our practice is filled with your like I said, your run of the mill felonies. And if I am of the mindset that they overcharge the case, which they do all the time, or in the event that I think that they're asking for too much time if they've made a plea offer, which they usually do in those cases. Like those cases, you're usually in the lower felonies. You're always going to get some kind of offer from the state. They'll give it to you early. They want to try to get it off their docket. They want to get the case closed. They're like, this is what our evidence is. This is what our offer is. You've got 2 weeks or the offer's, you know, null and void.
Yeah.
So they try to put the pressure on us early on. And if we get the discovery, we're like, well, you know, there's some issues here. And, you know, this is a case where it's fightable. But if I have a client in a case where they're like, I did it, I'm shifting my focus. My focus is then, all right, well, you've now made a confession to me. You've admitted your guilt. I could never put you on the stand to lie. I'm not going to suborn perjury. It's completely unethical. It's illegal.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it. So my job then becomes trying to negotiate a plea that fits the crime. Because that's where a lot of the, you know, the back and forth between the defense and the prosecution is, are they making an offer that's fair? And again, when you're talking about an intentional homicide, there's not much wiggle room. You know what I'm saying? So it's that's a pretty short negotiation.
And that's what I'm trying to understand, like what went on behind the scenes here. Would Ann Taylor have known 2.5 years ago that he did this? I'm not asking for her opinion, but like, could he have said to her 2.5 years ago, I did this and we need to fight this. Could you still then go and fight this as if, and name other suspects and things like that? Or if the client says to you, I did this, is that a hard stopping point? And like, now we just got to go to a plea deal. I can't represent you. And I can't certainly name other human beings if you've told me that you're the one who did this.
Yeah, in that particular type of situation, number one, I don't think that Koberger made the admission at that point in time. I think the more likely scenario is that Ann Taylor had that conversation with Brian that I've been having with you about that case for an awful long time, really since the PCA dropped that sheath, you know, with his DNA. And we're talking about a singular profile on that sheath under the button is fucking smoking gun evidence. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much you can do with it. And she tried to fight it from the suppression angle in terms of the IgG and saying that the way they go, you know, the way that they went about getting it was unconstitutional. Once she lost that, you know, she's having real conversations with her client.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's saying, look, they're trying to kill you. Okay. Like, I need you to understand the fact that they're trying to execute you. This isn't like silver tongue magic world.
Yeah.
Like that is going to be very powerful evidence of your guilt to a jury. That's facts. So I think what it was that the state wasn't willing to budge on it, you know, but I think that the thing that lay people tend to forget is that it's essentially two different trials.
Yeah.
So you have the initial trial, which is determining guilt or not guilt. And then you have the second trial in a death penalty case, which is mitigation and aggravation. And there was some, you know, the fact that he was autistic, you know, diagnosed autistic, and he had some issues. I think had the state worried a little bit in terms of do we continue on with the trial itself, spend millions of dollars additional, give him the opportunity to spend a decade and a half appealing this, torturing the families with that shit, all with the thought in mind that there's a chance that despite the horrific nature of the case, despite the fact that four beautiful kids lost their lives and thousands of people have been devastated because of that, because the reach on that goes far beyond just the immediate mm-hmm. families. It's everyone that came into contact with those people. Their life has been changed to varying degrees somewhat by the fact of the loss of those kids. So, you know, when you take that kind of that depth of loss into consideration and you're thinking about, all right, is it possible that we win, we get the guilty verdict, but that they elect not to give him the death penalty because of the mitigating factors? I think that was a real consideration for them, because like it's just one of those things where ultimately, you know, you see it in cases where you're sometimes surprised when certain defendants are not given the death penalty, where you're thinking it's a no-brainer. And I think that they looked at all those different things, and then ultimately the prosecutors decided, and I think Ann went to Koberger and said, look, you know, I'm going to ask you this flat out. Do you think that I should go ask them if they'll take death off the table? Mm-hmm. And I think as trial closes in, Tony, you know, defendants become a lot more pragmatic in terms of the reality of the situation. Like Koberger's a psychopath, mm-hmm. but he's not an idiot. You know, I mean, the dude's got a pretty high education level. Yeah. He has an understanding of the process. He has an understanding of what the evidence was. And, you know, when it boils down to, is he going to try to preserve his own life when he had zero remorse, apparently, mm-hmm. for taking four other lives? I mean, it just shows what a selfish fuck he is, and a complete sociopath and psychopath. He's all the paths.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when she went to him and said, look, you know, do you want me to go ask him if they'll take the death penalty off the table? And he must have said yes. So she went to him late in the game, 11th hour, and you know, asked him if they'll take the death penalty off the table. And then prosecution team obviously had discussions internally, and they looked at the strength of the case. Because I don't think that there's any part of them that thought they were going to lose that trial. Mm-hmm. Because of the strength of the evidence, and despite what all the Probergers are saying and their conspiracy shit,
yeah,
I'm telling you flat out, I've said it from the beginning, and I'll die on that hill. It was incredibly powerful evidence.
Yeah,
like I had little to no doubt. Obviously, pending trial, obviously seeing them vet all the evidence at trial had to occur in order for me to be 100% certain that it was him, but that thing leaned guilty from the minute that I saw it. I thought yeah. the cops did a great job on that. I thought they got the right guy. And I think that we should all be thankful for the fact that they got him off the streets. Because if you have any kind of misconception that this guy wouldn't have done it again, yeah. you're dreaming. Yeah. This guy was just getting started. Had he not forgotten that sheath there or lost it or not been aware that he left it, we might be dealing with a very, very different scenario here, man. I don't know that they would have gotten him.
Yeah.
I don't know that they would have caught him.
Yeah.
You know, maybe with the car thing, but it would like without that sheath, if you subtract that sheath, then you're left with blurry images of a vehicle that looks to be potentially his car, but that's it. And yeah. bushy eyebrows. Like that's kind of the heart of your evidence. That sheath was everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he probably said, you know what? Yeah, I asked him. And then, you know, they, like I said, they talked about it. And they said, you know what, let's make the offer. And because there are huge benefits to it. There just are. And it's I understand how Steve Gonsalves is incredibly upset. I would be yeah. too.
Let's
you know,
talk,
I don't know what I'd do if yeah. somebody did that with one of my kids. I'd be of the mindset that I'm going to try to, if there was a way for me not to get to cause more trauma to my family, if mm-hmm. I could handle this shit on my own,
yeah.
I would. Because yeah. that's how I feel about my kids. You know, I would take a bullet for my kids without blinking an eye. Yeah. And that's how Steve Gonsalves feels. And he felt that, that they didn't talk to them enough. They didn't go through the process with them, which is shitty.
Let's talk about that for a second. I mean, this is obviously this case specifically. There's many cases where the DA has to go to a family and say, look, here's what we're looking at. And I know a lot of times it's, what do you think? What's your consideration? We want to hear your thoughts on this. The fact that the way Steve described it as basically we got an email with a PDF that said, hey, read here. It was a little more contextual than that, but it wasn't a sit down. Let's weigh all this. It was, here's what we're doing. Right. Deal with it. Was that normal? I mean, is that just how this goes? Or does Steve have a really big point here that you really should have spent more time with us on this before saying we're going to accept your plea?
Well, I mean, ultimately, that final call is 100% in the purview of the prosecution. So they don't need to go to the families.
Sure.
In terms of, it's not a requirement on a strictly legal level. Yeah. In terms of a human being level, it's an absolute requirement in my world. I don't know how you move forward on anything like this without heavily consulting the families, to not only consult with them, but to inform them of the realities of the legal system and how this thing looks in the event of a guilty verdict and the process that follows that for decades, and because I hazard to guess that when Steve Gonsalves gets over his initial rage, which is completely and totally warranted, that as this progresses through the years, and as much as that gaping wound can heal, which is never fully, ever, you're never healing from that ever, all the way.
No.
That he's gonna come to the conclusion, well, at least this piece of shit admitted it. At least that's not a question anymore in my mind. And I've been spared the nightmare of having to go through the appellate process for two decades. And I hope that gives him some solace, because he deserves that. Mm-hmm. So, but in terms of, is it normal? I've just seen it from my side of it, and we have very different roles in the system, prosecutors and defense attorneys.
Yeah.
I deal with the defendant and their families in the aftermath of, what it feels like to be a family member of an alleged perpetrator or a convicted perpetrator who's done the unimaginable, and what that does and how that impacts the families of that person is devastating. I say it all the time. They're victims as well.
Oh yeah.
In a massively different way, but victims nonetheless. It destroys their families. They're everything that they've built, whether it's generational, whether it's in this life, it doesn't matter. Everything that they've known is destroyed by the actions of if it's their child. And it's, so like I see that side of it, but I also see the other side of it from afar, wherein I see these victims' families that unless they get an exceptional prosecutor who really, really takes it upon themselves to keep these families informed for decades, because prosecutors move on, they leave the office, they go into private practice, whatever they do, and they move on to all their other cases. But a lot of times those victims' families get left behind. And when appeals are filed down the road, these families are not informed. What does this mean?
Yeah.
They're not getting the call saying, hey, I just want to give you a heads up. Let's go through this appeal. I want to tell you whether or not I think it has legs, whether it's total bullshit, whether it's just pro forma being filed because that's what you do. Or if it's something that you should be concerned about, like those conversations just don't take place as much as they should. And so these families are left wondering and worrying and, fraught with anxiety, because this thing has now reared its ugly head again in what you thought and you hoped was over, and it's not, So I just wish that they would have sat down and had a real conversation, especially in a case that just, like, you can't escape the high profile nature of this case. I mean, people are going to talk about this case for years to come.
Do you think the state wanted to deal with this case from the beginning? I mean, that's kind of something I look back on this a little bit. I know some others have as well. I mean, they tore the house down. I mean, the DA is the DA. The police, I think, did a great job on this. As much as we were criticizing them at the very beginning, like, what the hell's going on here? They had their stuff together behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The DA's office seems to be a little more questionable on how, I think, how all this was handled behind the scenes. Do you think they really wanted this? Or were they really kind of hoping all along that, you know, maybe we can get a plea, get this done with, and wash our hands of this horrible, horrible thing that's in front of us?
I think that's true of any prosecution team. I mean, you're talking about you've got number one, remember, that's a political office that's held. And I thought Hippler did a fabulous job of kind of giving people a civics lesson at the beginning of that plea hearing yesterday. Like our followers, and we had a lot in chat yesterday as we were streaming that live. They were like, oh, get to it. I'm like, this is where I want you to listen.
Yeah.
Because this judge is explaining how the process works. Because I say it all the time and it comes off as cold, but the reality is emotion has no place in the law. Mm-hmm. It's not what this process is about. Of course, that doesn't mean that you're not empathetic, but in terms of the process in and of itself, there is no room for emotion in there. It's a cold place.
Yeah.
And you've got to deal with the facts and the evidence. And you've got to deal with everything else that comes with that. And we're talking about Latah County, Idaho. We're talking about a town that has a university that is the heartbeat of that town. So, yeah, man, there's a huge part of that is taken into consideration. Do you think that the University of Idaho wanted that fucking trial going on, man, for 3 months while their kids are in class? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like the thing was starting August 18th, matriculated, like the kids are coming back.
Yeah.
You think, even though it's an ADA, even though they moved it, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it's one of those cases that would haunt them forever.
And that's the thing, even if they had gone on with trial and let's say he was found guilty, you're exactly right. The appellate issues would have gone on forever, probably till Steve dies, and Koberger's still alive just because of the age difference there.
Yep.
I agree. It's like big picture, right thing was done. Emotions, all of it on the surface, 1000% understand Steve and agree with him at this moment in time, but
100%.
Bigger, calmer, rational thinking. Yeah.
And I hope Steve gets there. I really do. He deserves that. He deserves a modicum of peace. Look, the reality of these cases, man, is that nothing is bringing the loved ones back in these cases. Nothing. It doesn't exist. The best that we can do is to punish those that commit the crimes. And, you know, I saw a lot of tweets out there like justice was not done. Well, it was. It was done, you know, and that's like when you strip away the differentiation between an eye for an eye and what justice is, you know, and I've said it a million times. I mean, to me, there is no worse punishment than spending your life in a box. I don't give a shit. Like 60 years in a box, Tony, that's some real shit. Like, I don't care if they get to eat 3 meals a day. They have to keep them alive in order to continue to punish them. I don't care if they get to watch a TV for a couple hours. They never get to do all the things that we take for granted in our lives and our daily lives ever again. It to me is the most, I would rather die than 60 years in a box.
And I agree with that on most, for us, 1000%. I could not do it. But to someone like a Koberger, I almost feel like there's a Hannibal Lecter aspect to this where he's kind of enjoying it, where there's some pleasure in what should be punishment because now he's going to be studied for the rest of his life. Ramsland already said the other night with Brian, like, I'd be interested in studying him if he'd have me. And it would be a very interesting study without a doubt. But again, it's like giving in and giving him what he wants at the same point of being infamous. He's now there. He's there there with Bundy. He's there with Kemper. He's there with everybody.
Gacy.
In exactly. In the infamy line of serial killers. He is there. And I think I don't know that the box phases him all that much, to be completely honest, as it would to most.
You can't compare for Koberger comparing during the process.
Yeah.
Where he's still true. In the limelight to the reality.
Yeah. I hear you.
That prison door hits shut for the last time.
Yeah.
There's a finality to it that changes that mindset. And it's funny you said that. If you were to go back and listen to my initial coverage of Brian Koberger in that case, I said the exact same thing that you just said.
Yeah.
I was of the mindset that I thought that he was desirous of all the things that you just said so much that I was refusing to say his name.
Yeah.
I would not name him.
I remember that. Yeah.
A year.
Yeah.
And then finally, once the case kind of like got legs, I'm like, you know what? There's no point. Like, people are not going to know who I'm talking about.
So
I agree, man. I think there is an element to this guy that is you're spot on, man. Like this guy. But here's the thing is that if you look at a vast majority of these guys with Ed Kemper and Fish being, which was in the early 1900s, they're just not honest with any of the people that are studying them. Like Ramsland's wonderful. I love what she tries to do.
Yeah.
But if you've got people that are just not being honest about a situation, or the other part of it is, you know, this guy's fucking broken mentally.
Yeah.
He is not a normal person. He is not you and I. He is not. Yeah. People don't understand how you can do this. And I'm like, okay, well, it's because we don't understand how the human mind works at all. We have very little knowledge about how the brain actually works and functions. And in this type of situation, you're trying to get answers from somebody who doesn't know the answers himself as to why he's broken. He has no fucking idea why his mind is like the way it is.
Yeah.
Like, to be compelled, because you going into this, you have to imagine how obsessive he was, how obsessively he was thinking about doing this.
Sure.
For months, maybe years.
Yeah.
It was at the forefront of his mind that he had this compulsion to do this thing that we will never understand. And if he can't understand why he's that way, no one else is going to be he's not going to be able to give honest answers. You know, did he ever battle like in part of the Gacy tapes when my father was preparing him for his insanity defense case, you know, there were glimmers of truth in there, you know, and like towards the end when Gacy got really sloppy with Rob Peast and kind of broke his typical MO and, you know, just snatched this kid where it was clear that they were going to put together that Gacy was the last person that saw him. And, you know, that ended his reign of terror. And, you know, when he talked about it, he was like, at that point in his evil career of killing, you know, he had realized that he couldn't stop himself. And, you know, he was like exhausted because that guy would literally work all day as a contractor. And then like his kill time was like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning after he'd work all day and then go troll for victims and then bring them back and do whatever he did. And then he'd get up at 7. The guy would sleep like an hour and he did it for years. And, you know, but he finally realized that, you know, he was trying to work more in the hopes that he'd sleep so that he wouldn't do what he was doing. Like there was a part of it and it wasn't remorse.
Yeah.
It was like exhaustion for him. Like it's just that their minds are so cracked and fractured and broken in a way that us as normal human beings, and we all have fucked up heads in one way or another. We all deal with our own shit, but this is a completely different thing. You can't really even categorize what they are. you know, in terms of how their mind works, because we just can't contemplate it. We just don't understand it. We don't know, is it, you know, a synaptic thing where things aren't firing, or have they reached some other part of the brain that most of us just don't access? Is it nature versus nurture? Is it both?
Usually a little bit of everything, and that's what makes them a little bit something. Would you have trusted a jury with this case at the end of the day to get it right? Yes. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. You'd have been confident.
I think juries get it right most of the time. And I've said it once, and I'll say it a million times, that fucking sheath is just smoking gun evidence.
Yeah.
There is no explanation in the world as to why that sheath with his DNA was found under the girls. None.
Yeah.
No one's buying any kind of bullshit they would have tried to cook up. No jury's buying it.
No.
No jury's buying it ever. So yes, I 100% would have trusted. Like, I don't think that's the thing. I know people are saying that, oh, the prosecution didn't have the balls to bring. I don't think that's it. I really don't. I think that there's a lot of things to take into consideration. That small county just saved the taxpayers millions and millions of dollars, because it's not just for the trial. It's for the entire appellate process that takes place after. It has to get paid for by the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. It goes on forever.
Yeah.
For two decades or more.
Yeah.
You know, before this guy's executed, he might have died of natural causes before they were able to stick him in front of a firing squad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that part of it has to be taken into consideration. It's just how the legal process works. The wheels of justice turn very, very slowly. And when you take into consideration all of the factors, the money side of it, the humanity side of it, because when you listen to Matty Mogan's father and you read his statement, he has a very different view.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fascinating to look at it, because we're all human beings. We all process grief and trauma differently. We're not the same. None of us are the same. And, you know, for him, he felt the relief. And you know what? That fucking psychopath stood up in court and said, I did these things.
I want to get to that. And you're right. Both of them made very compelling statements. And they're both right in their own sense, because it's an
individual. There is no wrong answer there. There is no wrong opinion on that.
I heard both of them, like, I hear you. I can see completely both ways.
And totally.
It's just, let's talk about the moment in court where he stood up. Didn't even really need to stand up other than to be sworn in. But that was a creepy moment for me, because Ann Taylor, she did her thing. She stood up, did her thing to the judge. And then it was time. Koberger, he was fidgeting. He was like a third grader waiting to stand up. And as I've said, get his participation trophy. And he just couldn't wait. And he stood up without even being asked. And the judge is like, well, while you're up, we'll swear you in, but you can sit down. You're like, you don't need to. I appreciate the respect. I don't think it was an offer of respect on Koberger's part. I think it was Koberger in his own weird sense of, this is the moment I'm about to bask in. And the judge kind of shut that down, like, sit your ass down. But that was weird. Like, it felt like he was really, it wasn't a, you know, shit, I got to say yes. And all, it was like, yes. Like, I am telling you, I did this. What was your take on Koberger's demeanor in that moment of admitting his guilt, name by name, charge by charge?
The one word that I came up with during my live, which I think is the perfect word for it, is chilling.
Yeah.
It was fucking chilling to watch it. I had goosebumps in the worst type of way, goosebumps from watching it, because we just don't see that.
No.
You don't see it, Tony. Like, you don't see a dude, like, and it goes to everything that we've been saying about his mindset and his personality and where he's at mentally with this thing. It was chilling to the bone, man. Yeah. Like, it was like, this was a killer who just stood up without an ounce of remorse. And we'll see during sentencing, he's going to have the opportunity to say something. Like, that's going to be fucking fascinating to see if he's going to say something and what he's going to say, you know, and it's going to be probably one of the most devastating things that we're ever going to watch, is those families get up there and get to say their piece as to how this man destroyed the fabric of their lives in a way that's so fucking profound that it's like, It's hard to imagine. It's unimaginable, really.
That's going to be a really tough one to listen to.
Oh, dude, yeah. I'm going to be crying like a fucking baby. Yeah. Like, Gary, like, one of the most powerful things that I've seen, like, when you watch these victim impact statements from, like, the school shootings and the aftermath of that, man, like, when I watched, what's his face, the kid who they charged the parents, like, my mind, I covered it. I can't believe I killed the kid where they charged the two parents. They were the first chair. Like, what's his name?
I know what I'm talking about.
I can picture the kid. Yeah. It'll come to me as I'm speaking. It's my age. But when I watched those victim impact statements, man, and it was like, it was one after another, and it was family and it was friends. And it was like the eloquence of some of those kids that stood up and explained how it impacted them was some of the most powerful words I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I imagine that that day on July 23rd is going to be a lot like that. And you're going to hear it all.
Yeah.
You're going to hear just rage. You're going to hear absolute sorrow, the deepest sorrow. I mean, it's like, and it's so important for us to hear that because it makes it real to us, because it's one thing to sit and watch shit on a TV, but to have even an inkling of what that might feel like if it were your family that was impacted is important for all of us. And it really, it kind of puts into focus, you know, just how devastating these cases really are.
Yeah. It's going to be something to watch. They didn't make it a requirement in the plea deal that he had to say anything at all. So he may not say a word. I think a lot of us are going back to BTK when he did a very similar thing to this right before trial, saying, "Yep, I'm going to plead," and then stood there for 45 minutes and methodically laid out everything he did for all those years. I wonder if we are going to see something like that here, or if this is, you know, they're very different cases. BTK was active for decades. Koberger, this, far as we know, is his first run at a horrible, horrible thing. BTK, I think, had a level of the grandiose and was proud of his years of evil. Koberger had a little sliver of evil in his life that did a lot of damage in a very short period of time. So I'm wondering if he's going to have the gumption to stand up and say what he did. If he wants to, if he will, if that's like a moment of joy for him, of being able to express that, or if it's he's just going to stand silent like he did when they asked him, you know, did you do this? Guilty, not guilty.
That's not when that happens. So that statement of allocution the defendant can give is typically at sentencing.
I know he wouldn't do it back then by any means, but I'm just saying.
No, what? I know exactly what you're saying. I just wanted to be clear that the time for pleading is exactly what they did, pleading factual basis by the state.
I know.
When we get to the sentencing, that's when we get that question answered.
Sure.
Will he give a statement? Will he turn around to the families and apologize, or will he stand up and
just listen.
Say nothing, man? You know, it's like, if our theme is correct, if what we think about this guy is correct, I'd be stunned if he doesn't say something. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate that he's going to turn around and show any empathy to the families. I'd be stunned if he did that. Cause I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. This guy's broken. And like, he's not normal. He's not a normal person. There's something just
does he want people to know
damaged in his mind, man.
Does he want people to know his secrets, quote unquote, you know, or is that, does he want to have some of this still in the vest? I mean, almost like BTK he's not dead yet, but he's on death's door, you know, up until now, he's still like doing little riddles here and there because he wants to have people look at him in infamy and wonder what else you got. The fact that Koberger has been called out on everything, going, look at all the dumb things you did in this case. I don't know. It's a weird look into a mind that none of us are ever truly going to understand.
Yeah. And I have to think I mean, he doesn't ever want to become irrelevant.
No.
You know, like I firmly believe that. I really, it's like hearing that when Huerman got snatched up, that him and BTK became pen pals, you know, like talking about prison food and what it's like. I think that, and I will not be shocked when we come to find out that other monsters have now accepted him into their fraternity of evil.
I just get the chills.
They're pen palling each other and writing each other. So yeah, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, man. I mean, it's like, I want to hear what I want to hear being said to the families. I really don't give a fuck about the rest of what he has to say.
Yeah.
The only thing that I care about hearing is some kind of remorse, which I know he doesn't feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's not like, capable of it. That's the thing.
Yeah, right. He doesn't live in him.
Even if he wanted to feel it, he can't. And I think he knows exactly that. And that's no matter how much we want that, it's not the, the analogy I make is like, it's like saying to someone who's blind, well, just look, read a little closer. Like, I'm blind. No, just look at the text. Just write, let me blow it up for you. They can't see.
Can't see.
It's just not there.
Can't see. It's not, it doesn't exist.
It's a sense that doesn't exist.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, all we know is that if he were to do that, we'd all be talking about how disingenuous it appeared. You know what I mean?
Because so it would like, be, yeah, it would be, it would be, I mean, emulating like behavior.
Yeah, it's but people have a morbid curiosity. Like we all want to try to understand why.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those questions that sometimes, short of AI figuring it out,
sometimes there just is no why. There just is no why. It's just
there is no why.
Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Get it anywhere you download podcasts. Of course, as always, thank you for your insight into
my pleasure, my friend.
This case.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, There are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.